Good evening. Good evening. Our lives, the human life, is very strongly influenced and maybe even controlled by our concern for the results of what we do or what we hope to do. In other words, our lives are very much influenced by how we feel at the end of a project or an event or in a task, at the end in the future, how we feel when the task is finished. How we will feel. The anticipation of it influences our life a great deal. So when we have a success in something we do, we are very much encouraged by it. We're happy and we're energized. And this can happen in any field. In art, in the arts, in medicine, in sports, in politics, in the legal system, in law, in the business world, in school, and in your personal relationships. We always hope to have a success when we start something. And of course, the opposite is true if we have an experience we don't like, if we lose, if we have a bad experience, if we lose the football game or lose in a court of law, lose the business deal, if we don't succeed, we feel bad. So how we feel about the end result of something has always influenced us. And if we have a bad experience, we can become discouraged and anxious, and even depressed. And those feelings, either from success or from a disappointment, those feelings don't go away quickly. We retain the emotional traces of these experiences. We remember, we store away the emotional traces of the results of these events in our life. And so we go through our day very eager to repeat the satisfaction of a win, of a success. And we also worry about repeating some kind of painful loss. When we worry too much about repeating a loss, or if we worry too much about not being successful, we may resist even starting something. We may quickly give it up once we've started when we fear we may not be successful. And many people spend their lives continuing to try to erase or cover up a painful memory. Now, this concern for success and concern for failure, this is not inherently bad. This is not inherently wrong. It's inherent in us. It's in our DNA. Because when you think about our ancestors of long, long ago, when their lives depended on having a successful hunt or a successful search for water, very much success-oriented. We have to hunt and kill the deer so that our community can have something to eat this week. Or when we go search for water, we better find something so that we can stay alive. So we're very much oriented towards how we can be successful and how we can avoid failure. Now, all of us have experienced the one or the other. concern about success, concern about failure. We've experienced both, each of us, all of us. So there are very few people in the world who are without some thought of avoiding a disappointment. Even the most confident and successful person has concern for not failing and wanting to be successful. At the same time, no one lacks the quality of having felt satisfaction. Even the most discouraged person that you meet has got some history of feeling satisfied with a success, some past success. So we've experienced both. And so our life is based on what I'll call how sticky these traces are, these traces of past experiences. Which ones stick the most will determine how we lead our lives. But when we understand this point and look at our own life carefully, we will realize that if we spend our life entirely on whether we win some activity or lose in that activity, when winning and losing is our 100% of our concerns, we will realize that this cannot fill our innermost desire. If these traces of past successes and past successes, if they dominate our mind, we will have an empty feeling. We will never feel alive. We will never feel like we're making a fresh start, free from traces. And then when we don't understand this process, our life will always be spent seeking to fill an empty space. And even if we become very, very successful, our life will be spent in search of something that's called fulfillment. But if we allow ourselves to be too much concerned with successes and fear of failure and have an empty feeling, it's a big delusion. This empty feeling is a big delusion, because life itself is never empty. It's always full. It's all already complete. And our practice is to help us recognize this truth, that our life is complete, independent of whether we are successful in something or not successful in something. Too much concern about the outcome of our activities hinders us from seeing the way things are, hinders us from seeing reality. So we create our own hindrances to seeing when we attach too much to the emotional traces of the past, because we will waste too much time wrestling with them. We need to be concerned with trying to be successful and trying to avoid failure. We do need to be concerned about such things. That's part of being human. It's just that we have to be careful not to let that concern overwhelm us, to take it lightly, and to find what the Buddhism calls a middle way. Not to be totally indifferent to success and failure, but not to be overwhelmed. Our practice lets us find that middle way. So if we have a misunderstanding or a deluded view of our life, and we have hindrances to seeing, they really are a product of our emotional attachments. And it really means we have become overwhelmed by the aroma of desire. The desire to be successful. We're overwhelmed by the aroma. Our desires and our attachments and our fears are very strong aromas, like a strong perfume. And they can be seductive. They can get under our skin and they can get into our hair and our nostrils, and they will permeate our mind. Our practice is, to put it simply, is to wash away the aroma of desire. In effect, we enable the breeze of awareness to sweep away aversions and attachments based on the past. So in addition to all of that, our lives are controlled by who we imagine who we are. The images of successes and failures are like paintings of who we think we are, or who we want to be, and who we would like to avoid being. Ordinary life seems to many to be lived like a chess game. If you know chess at all, you know there are different pieces, all with different capacities. People, we tend to see other people as pieces engaged, like on a chessboard, in positioning themselves to gain some advantage. We see people doing it, and we ourselves may try to do it. We position ourselves on the game board of life to try to gain some advantage. If you know chess, you know that all the pieces have different levels of capacity, and they have a different scope of what they can do. So at the lowest level, we have the pawn, who has very little range of movement, cannot change direction, cannot retreat, but only go forward a little bit. And so has very little power and is very vulnerable. That's the pawn. Other pieces have more scope and less limitation. And as you go up the ladder, from the knight to the queen, more scope, more power, and less limitation. And we tend to see the world like that. Where am I? Today I am a pawn. Can I become a knight? Can I become the queen? We think of life in those terms. But our life situation is always changing. And our scope changes. And our capacity to be in control is changing every minute. So, for example, let's consider a policeman. When the policeman is in uniform and out on the street, with all the various hardware that they have, a lot of power there. people give the policeman lots of power. But when the policeman goes back to the police station or goes home, he may feel like a pawn when he's out of uniform and not in the area where he has power. And also think about a CEO of some company. This CEO she may have a lot of power and a lot of control in the office. But if she goes through a red light and the policeman stops her, she doesn't have so much power anymore. When she's stopped by the policeman, where is that power then? So it changes. Our scope and our power can be transient. And this is true for all walks of life. College professors, the kid in school who has to go home and take a different role. All of our roles in life are temporary. They are relative, and for that reason, they are unreal. We are not our roles. They change from moment to moment. And these days, most people feel the need to increase their capacity and increase their scope, increase the scope of their lives. It's called ambition. It's called wanting to raise standard of living and various things. We all want to extend and enhance the range of what we can do. And this is very necessary. It's very natural. We have to do it. It is the natural human urge to fully express our inherent capacities. But if there are moments when we find ourselves feeling like the pawn or some minor piece on the board, at that time, we should be the best pawn. And not complain that we're not a more powerful piece. When we find ourselves in the position of being a pawn, it's foolish to wish to be the queen, the most powerful piece on the board. So the point of our life, the point of our practice, is to completely express our life fully, every moment, just as we are, and not worry about success or power. So if delusion should take hold of us, and we imagine or we act as if we have more scope and power than we actually do in that moment, that will create a problem. In other words, if the CEO who got stopped by the policeman for going through a light starts arguing with the cop, you'll be in trouble. You can't stop me. You can't make me a pawn. I'm the CEO. You can get in trouble doing that. So seeing life as a game, like a game of chess, and wanting the power that comes with being higher, this is a delusion. It takes us away from the reality of the moment. So if the delusion of our ego obscures the reality of the moment, life becomes unreal and we become anxious about it. So our practice helps us let go of that tendency so we can see reality. reality just as it is. So our practice helps us become aware that life and reality is not a game in a two-dimensional world. And real life is not about who wins. Real life is not about who wins. Our practice is about seeing the larger body of who we are and feeling 100% connected in our life, in our daily life. We do have things that need to take care of. We have responsibilities, duties, and allegiances. And sometimes taking care of these things can be difficult. The tasks can be long, the projects can be overwhelming. And it can be easy to become discouraged and quit if we try to win at the task too soon. If we try to have success with the project too soon, we may quit. We may be discouraged. We become very anxious. So when we talk about in our practice one breath at a time, one step at a time, one moment at a time, we're really saying, take this large task called life and break it down into small pieces, one moment at a time, so that we can feel small successes moment by moment. So we concentrate, we give our attention to our breathing. And if we limit ourselves to that activity, we will feel success moment after moment. And we build up these small successes so that we find confidence in our life. And the large task of life doesn't seem so overwhelming. So when we intuitively feel successful in this breath and then feel successful in the next one and then in the one after that, we will not burn out and we will always be motivated and inspired. This is our practice. Zen is like that. Practice means we are successful in each moment, this moment, and we don't worry about what happens out there. So how much power we have is not the point. And how difficult the task may be is not the point. Because we don't live the way our ancestors do. Our survival is not at stake each moment. My daughter-in-law told me a cute story. She's in the software world, as many of us are. She is a quality assurance manager, software quality assurance manager for a mortgage insurance company. And recently they had a new release of some software and some problems came up. The thing wasn't installing and so forth. And they were struggling with it and everybody was getting very unhappy and discouraged and anxious, and the vice president came in and said, "Nobody's going to die. It's just mortgage insurance." nobody's life was at stake. So perspective was important. And I told her, I'd like to meet this guy. So, one breath at a time, and one moment of clear, undistracted awareness is enough. One at a time. So our spiritual life is not a... In our spiritual life, we don't care about gaining power or gaining status or winning the game. And we learn how to do that by sitting with selflessness. Sitting in Zazen with selflessness, with a selfless mind, and let it flow into life's activities. And that is how we fulfill ourselves in each moment, according to each situation and what we can do in that situation. Not what we want to be accomplishing down the road. This is the only way we can learn to recognize who we really are and to fill up any feeling of empty space. It's just mortgage insurance. Good for him. Does anybody have a question? Yes, sir.
What about if it is difficult to have a feeling of success with breathing when it becomes very difficult?
Don't give up. Find the patience to continue. And give your mind a chance to let go of any feeling of disappointment. Just keep going. But don't quit. Don't quit, because that will create a kind of wound that you never get over. Oh, you just keep going. And little by little, you find success in your breath. Little by little, with patience. Thank you. Yes, Richard.
If something happens and I declare it to be a success or a failure, does it have any substance? Is it a success or a failure, a real thing, or is it just an interpretation or an emotion, like a temporary thing?
It's an abstraction. Those things are abstractions. They are just ideas or words we assign to some feeling. Not real. Many years ago, when first starting the practice, my family and I lived in this house over in Los Altos, which at the same time was the first Zendo, and the group, Sangha, had invited a young priest from Japan to come to be the resident teacher, and until he got settled, he lived with us, so we got to know him pretty well. And so one day the clothes dryer broke, stopped working, and we said, well, let's see if we can fix this. Well, hours went, we started taking it apart, and kept taking it apart. After several hours, we had this thing all over the floor, and we had to quit. And I felt very frustrated, very anxious and frustrated. And he said, We did good work today. Oh, what a new way of seeing things. We just put our effort into it, and we did the best we could, and even though it looked like failure, oh, he was so up for it. The next day, we got it back together. So, success or failure are really abstractions. Thank you. Yes, Lee.
What about having a feeling of doing a job for your own joy, of completing it to your satisfaction? I mean, how does that read? Whether somebody else comes to you and says, oh, you did well or not. But just, you know, you have a feeling about facing some task and you just put yourself into it because you want to do the best you can.
That's it. That's it. What else is there? What else is there?
Right. And in some sense, you do want a success for yourself. You know, it's like every time you look at that washing machine or that garden or that job you did at work or whatever it is, you know, you say, "I can't have good." You know?
I can do that.
Okay.
I can do that. And it's that's part of our creative human nature, part of our, oh, what can I say? What's a good, it's our spiritual capacity. We want to do things, and we want to do things right, and we want to make things better, and we want to feel that we are giving ourselves and adding value to the world around us. And we should do that. And we don't have to go tell anybody if they don't notice. We don't have to advertise. Just, I can do that. I did that. What's next? If we can have that attitude, we can all go home. Thank you. Umar?
Plus, that story that you were talking about, the vice president coming in saying that it's not the end, it's not the end. I was thinking, why are people always looking up to other people to make decisions for them? That's something.
I think it's because they're still learning. This fellow, whoever he is, seems to me to be a good leader, because he saw a situation and he saw that people's perspectives were a little distorted, and rather than come in and I'll take over now, he just suggested to them another way to look at things. You're not going to die. Just encouraging people to see things in a different way, so that they can become leaders the next time. And they can say to their friends and their children, it's not so bad. It's just a flat tire or something. Thank you. Is that Columbine?
Yes. Sometimes I can be very sensitive to things of anxiety and noise and stuff like that. And sometimes in a work environment, things are very fast-paced and lots of egos and lots of competition. And so I was wondering, what's the best method to try to kind of quiet it down? Is it better to try to change your perception or try to influence other people's actions to try to kind of calm down the situation?
When we are in the midst of a crazy situation like that, I think for our own good and for the good of everybody, we should try to influence it. I think if we say, oh, it's too much for me, I'm not going to say a word or I'm leaving, that's a kind of feeling of hopelessness. We should try. And depending on the situation, we should use our intuitive skill to find something to say or to suggest that hopefully moves the energy in a different direction. And that capacity, grows in us the more we practice. We begin to see situations more completely and more clearly, and we instinctively know how to move it, what to say, what to do. So I think we should always, in a situation, crazy situation like that, before we leave and give up and throw up our hands, we say, let me look at this. Let me look at this and see if there's something I could do. So I think trying to influence a difficult situation is, that's part of our job, I think. Try anyhow. Maybe it won't work, but we can try. Thank you. Do we have any announcements tonight? Yes, Bonnie.
I just want to remind everyone that we are recording the questions after lecture now. So if you don't